the buzzer. McCord on its way.
Oh my goodness.
They have to get it. With no timeouts, they do.
Courtside with Greenberg and Dokic, the definitive college basketball podcast.
Hey, welcome. It's the world's greatest podcast, a.k.a. Courtside with Greenberg and Dokic. And I got to tell you, Seth Greenberg, Coach Whisper, I'm running hot on Kim Mulkey. And I know you expressed your concerns, but it's not even concerns. It's just people are just foolish. And I've talked about Coach Almighty numerous times, but when Kim Mulkey, the coach at Baylor women's basketball, comes out whining about the almighty dollar and how the NCAA has to have a tournament, John Feinstein did the same thing last year. And the NCAA then canceled the tournament, making him look a fool. But the truth of the matter is, Kim Mulkey saying that is so ridiculous. And frankly, I've heard from a lot of coaches, their terms are far worse than ridiculous. Like, she makes $2.27 million to coach a sport. Her players are in a protective bubble. They are getting everything they need, far, far more than anybody that lives here in Indianapolis, downtown Indianapolis, any big city. And she doesn't have to play. And Gino Auriemma said it best, like, okay, you might be right. It might be the almighty dollar, but so what? How do you think women's sports get paid? As you know, Seth, my wife was a softball coach. She knows the money for her program didn't come from attendance. You know what came from? It came from freaking men's basketball and football. And where does the money for men's basketball come from? A lot of places, mostly from the NCAA men's tournament. And we can talk about everything's equal, but it's not. The men's tournament brings in a ton of money. Gino Auriemma was smart enough to understand that. And Kim Mulkey, I think, is a complete and utter fool. And if she doesn't want to coach, don't coach. Look, in this day and age, we encourage opting out. It's fine. I call it quitting. People can call it opting out. Don't coach. Give your salary back. Somebody came at me, well, you haven't given money back. The hell I haven't. I just volunteered a 15% reduction in pay and another 10%. On ads that I do to my radio show. And you and I both gave money back to ESPN when they asked. So I don't even want to hear that garbage. So she has plenty of options, but to blindly whine and moan about the almighty dollar in the NCAA. We get millionaire coaches and millionaire broadcasters are the ones whining and moaning. You know who's not? Players. They ain't whining and moaning, but the millionaire broadcasters and whining and moaning. The millionaire coaches whining and moaning. And I've had enough of it. Shut up. If you don't want to play, don't play. But at least have half a brain and understand what is actual. Let me ask you, Kim Mulkey, you sell your house. You doing it for the almighty dollar? You just sell your house. Kids go to every one of your camps for free? Money means nothing? Let me ask you something. Are we just supposed to go into the store and we pay with kittens? Let's just pay with kittens. Your salary. You do it for free? The answer to all of it is, of course, not. Kim Mulkey, you give me gas. You just give me gas.
Throw a sock at her.
Yeah. I'll throw a sock at Kim Mulkey. Ah!
I had a sock next to the bed. I rolled it up. And I said, yeah.
Very well said. Look, I was on Mark Packer's show yesterday. And quite honestly, I echoed the same thing. Like, here's the deal. If someone wants to opt out, you know what? That's their choice. And you know what? I respect that. Anyone who's uncomfortable, I respect. If you decide as a coach, as a player, as a team, that's your choice. No one is making you play. No one is making you coach. I'll tell you what I have a problem with. I have a problem with after you coach and you lose a game.
Right.
Then all of a sudden you say how uncomfortable you are and how difficult it is. And I don't know why I'm even doing this. Well, I know why you're doing it. You're doing it because you want to get paid. I mean, it's plain and simple. So she's like a walking contradiction. And, you know, to me, you know, it is really, really simple. Pick your spots. And your spot is, you know, like if you felt comfortable walking on that floor at Baylor, then you know what? Don't coach your team. Someone else will coach your team. If your team feels like they're uncomfortable playing, then don't don't play. That's fine. You have a right to do that. We live in America. You have choices. You can decide what you want to do and what you don't want to do. But to complain and do what you did yesterday or the day before yesterday was embarrassing. And we talked about it, you know, on game day the other day. And I said, look, I feel for the – I say this every time. I feel for the single mom who's homeschooling her kids and trying to earn a living. I feel for the family that's gotten laid off, all right, and can't pay their mortgage or their rent and can't feed their kids. You know, I feel for those people, the people that are really been subjected to tremendous obstacles during the course of this pandemic. You know what? I don't feel for Kim Mulkey. I'm sure she lives in a multi-million dollar house. I'm sure she's got tens of million dollars in the bank. You know what? And she's earned that. She's won games. She recruited players. She's won championships. Great. That doesn't make you an expert on the world. And you know what? If you feel that way in your heart of hearts, don't play. I have no problem with it. But don't sit on a pedestal after you lost a game and explain that you didn't feel like coaching. You don't think you should be playing because you know what? I have no time for it. So we move on.
That's
from Kim.
Last thing.
Yeah.
Throw sock at her. The last thing, Seth.
Yeah.
I thought it was absolutely beautiful and such a Kim Mulkey moment that she's complaining about all of this. And the picture under every article was her not wearing her mask. Like she's sitting there all hypocrite, you know, I'm so into health and safety and she's screaming. And I don't know if you've ever screamed. I think you have. But when you scream, boom,
I spit.
Right.
Well, and she does more hypocritical. I'll give you what's more hypocritical. You sat and watched the Baylor Kansas game yesterday.
Yeah.
They had 3,000-4,000 people at the game. They had groups of students side by side, no mask, screaming and yelling. Now, think about this, all right? That's your school that you're talking about, you know, I don't feel comfortable playing. Then you know what? Why don't you stand up to your administration and say, we don't need people at our games. It's not in the health and safety of all people involved. By the way, why don't you tell your administration, you know what? In our situation, what are we doing here? Everyone, it should be mandatory on our campus that everyone needs to wear a mask. No one should go out in public without wearing a mask. But you know what? Hypocritical, because in the end, she stood on that soapbox. She lost a game. She, you know, if she doesn't want to play, that's fine. But then stand up for the whole thing. Stand up for we shouldn't have people in the crowd. We should have to be mandatory wearing a mask. Right? Stand up to the people in your administration and push back on the things that you say you stand for. But obviously you don't stand for it. You can wear a mask while doing a post-game press conference. You can demand that your players wear masks while they're sitting on the bench. You can say, I don't want any students in our games. You can say all the different things that you want if you really believe in this. But you know what? She was opportunistic. And you know what? If she coaches the next game, you know what she's going to do on Thursday or every other Thursday? She's going to get paid. And so if she feels so badly about what is going on, you know, maybe she should just take her paycheck and donate it back to someone who needs it.
Yeah.
I'll give you one other one. I'll give you last thing, Seth. If you don't like the men's tournament and you're insulted by the almighty dollar, tell your administration, don't put any of their money into our coffers.
Good point there.
If you're that upset about it. Seth, I got to talk to you about Michigan. I had Michigan as one of my top four teams.
Oh, wait, you're going to flip on them just like that?
No. I still got them among my top four teams. Right. However, the point is, there hasn't been an undefeated team in college basketball since 1976 for a reason. And at least in some leagues, there are some teams that, frankly, play better at home. I ask you, do you think as we have moved through about halfway through the season, do you think there is a home court advantage? And if so, let's say before it was 3.5 points, according to Jeff Sagarin and the Sagarin ratings, what would you put it at?
I don't think there's a home court advantage. I think the only advantage is you have to travel a long distance.
What about comfort?
I don't put as much in comfort because here's the deal. Human nature is especially today, young people need outside stimulus. I mean, that's just the way it is. When you play at home, that energy, is created. Why? Because the way the gyms and the arenas are set up, it's like set up at a pick game. It's not set up like it's an event. I mean, you think about how where the coaches are sitting. Think about how the players are spread out. Think about the bleachers being pushed in on the baselines. Think about the bleachers being pushed in on the sidelines. I don't think it may be a point. Maybe. I look at all these games in a lot of ways as glorified scrimmages in terms of the environment. So you've got to be – I think that the equalizer or the difference maker is not home court. I think it's maturity. I think teams that are a little bit more mature, a little bit tougher, are better. You know, like the Barn is a different environment. So, you know, again, I've only played one game in the Barn, so I don't know. I think that game was a revenge game. I think that game before, 46 points in the paint for Michigan, you know what? Richard Pitino said, you're not getting 46 in the point again. Paints in the point against us. I think Rich Pitino challenged Marcus Carr to say, you know what? You got dominated that last game. Now, no Eli Brooks in this game, but you know what? You've got to step up and you've got to make plays. You've got to take better shots. You've got to get in the lane and you've got to make the game easier for someone else. And I think he challenged his team. I think revenge games and time when you play a team a second time, you have a better understanding of what worked and what didn't work. So I think second time around, adjustments are an impact. I think it's just like the NBA playoffs in the bubble. I don't think there was any home court, except that everyone was always there. But to me, it's the second time you play a team. There are certain things that you can learn, and I think revenge is a factor. And I think Michigan was due. Like, I just think it's really hard in this environment. I say consistency and routine. Consistency, routine, or the lack of it, create inconsistency. It's hard for a team to be that good. Every single night, you're going to have an off night. They seemed a step slow. They seemed out of sorts. They didn't seem as locked in. Maybe it's because that everyone's been telling them how good they are. I don't know. I'm not going to speculate. But I took nothing away from that game except I think Minnesota's pretty damn good. I think Minnesota's pretty resilient. I think they've got good players. They've got maturity. They've got some versatility. Obviously, with Robbins being able to step out, Carr being able to get in the lane. And I think that that's going to happen in the Big Ten. Now the question is, how are they going to handle it, Michigan, when their nose gets bloody? That's the bigger question to me.
I agree with all that, but I disagree with the no home court. I think I've done four or five games. I went to one as a fan, and I think there's still a home court. I don't think it's four. I think it's closer to one than four. But I do think that there is. I thought that in the Alabama-Auburn game, when they had about 1,800 people in there, I thought that was a home court. Indiana had
1,800 people home court.
Yeah. Indiana just had family in there, but it against Purdue, but it was more than that. It got going. I mean, you know, not Assembly Hall. I think there's a little bit more than what you're saying. And of course, to me, the revenge factor, second time you play them, was more important. And you know what? One of the things that I've always said about players, and you touched on it with Minnesota, but I think we could talk about most teams across the board. Kids are pretty resilient, man. Like, coaches lose their mind over a loss, and you can get a kid to go, look, Robbins, you know, a freshman kicked your ass. And some kids shy away from that. I was really impressed with Liam Robbins, the kid at Minnesota, for jumping up to that. And you're right. I mean, look, nobody's going undefeated. And I'm nowhere near off of Michigan. I think Michigan's tremendous. And I do think, you know, you've talked about this. You try to play two point guards, you know, all the time, particularly in modern basketball. And frankly, without one of them, Michigan looked a little lost to me. Let me go this route with you. We saw it first time Kentucky, Duke, North Carolina, not in the AP top 25, first time since 1961. That goes along with your maturity argument, does it not?
Yeah, it's 100%. And maturity and lack of guard play. I mean, like, all three of those teams are relying on freshman guards. I mean, that's just the way it is. I mean, you know, now I do think I'm more optimistic on North Carolina now than I was before, because I thought Anthony Harris was really good. I thought he makes simple plays simple. I thought he could make an open shot. I thought he did the advanced pass. I thought because he can make a shot, he could feed the post. I thought he opened up the court. So I was a little more optimistic, but they're not in the top 25 team now. That's just the way it is. You know, they've got to play better. When I look at Duke and they play Pitt, I think today, like, I don't think Duke's tough enough to beat. I don't think Pitt. I don't think they're mature enough to beat Pitt. And I'm not saying Pitt's great. Pitt turns the ball over. They're not a great shooting team, although they did do those two things against Syracuse. They scored 64 points in the second half against Syracuse. But I look at Duke and I look at them as a lack of toughness, a lack of maturity. When things go south, they don't have the ability to kind of bow their neck and fight through things. They made a little bit of a run in that Virginia Tech game. And then Kentucky, I got to be honest with you, they just don't have good enough players. They have young prospects. There's a difference. Actually, they have young suspects. They have young guys that have a chance to be good players. I think that defensively, they're going to continue to get better. I think they've got length. But I just think offensively, I say it every week, end of the game, you need a bucket. Who do you give it to? They've given it to Olivier Saar twice for 15-foot jumpers. When I think of Kentucky, when I think of Cal's teams, that's balls going to John Wall, Tyrese Maxey. That's going to a dude that can just go and make a play. Oh. Those three teams are not NCAA tournament teams. Yet we have some new bloods, because those are blue bloods, like Baylor and like Florida State and like others, that are emerging. Now, the one guy that really blew my mind this weekend, though, is Sharif Cooper is a combination of Ja Morant and Patrick Mahomes.
Whoa.
That left-handed no-look pass was sick. Then the other one where he drove it and wrapped it around to get the cutter down the middle. I'm just saying, he's not Ja Morant yet, because but he has a feel and a vision. They're averaging almost 20 more points a game with him on the court. But I think John Calipari, I don't feel bad for him. I mean, he's fighting like hell. He's trying to coach his team. He's trying to get him tougher. I think that they'll get better. But I think their lack of physicality. Look at the bodies on the Kentucky players. Like, their bodies look like they're all young freshmen that haven't put in the work. Look at their inability to play through contact. Look at their inability to fight through a screen. I mean, like, what do you need strength for? Well, you know, if you become a piece of Velcro when you hit a screen, that's why you need strength. When you drive it and you have to play into contact and you're not strong enough and you just literally can't get any elevation like BJ Boston, all right, that's strength and conditioning. So I think that this year is the year of the new bloods, not the blue bloods.
Let me talk about Cooper for a second at Auburn. I did his first game against Alabama, and he was great. And I said this on the broadcast, and I don't know, you know, I know Auburn fans don't really understand basketball, but I got crushed by them in the media. I said, you know, Cooper is great. Like, I spent 2 hours, but I said, you know, it's my experience. Your first game, you're at your best. And then, you know, you kind of come back a little bit. And he came back against Kentucky a little bit. But I'll tell you this. You know how, Seth, you have a team. The team's played some of its season. Then you add a piece to it. And I'm telling you, Seth, and he started the game against Auburn or Alabama. 5 minutes into the game against Alabama, he had me wondering, how in the hell did Auburn even play a game without these guys? Yeah, I mean, he was that good. Like, okay, they won a game without this? Like, that's how good he is. Now, he has come back a little, you know, Kentucky, but he made plays at the end to go win the game. But I don't see him, you know, he's not going to average 23 and all that stuff. But I tell you this, I like their team. I said on the broadcast, and I don't know if it's rude or insane. I don't know. I just know that if I'm freaking Bruce, I'm thinking about rethinking my self-imposed one-year ban, man. I'm thinking about, like, wait a second. I'm going to make the tournament now.
Hey, but here's the deal. That dude ain't going to be there next year.
That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying.
You know, now he's got a good recruiting class, but that guy's not.
That's what I'm saying. Rethink it. Move it to next year if you think you're doing the right thing. But all right, we're going to have Chris Holtman on, and one of the reasons I wanted to have Coach Holtman on is they're doing a lot with a little. We all talk about the Big Ten is the toughest league, and they've won three in a row. They've not had their point guard, CJ Walker. Seth, last two games, they didn't have their backup point guard, Jimmy Sotos, a transfer from Bucknell. Yet what do? They go win. Now, they got monster tonight. But they go win at Rutgers, and Rutgers is slipping, I think, a little bit. They beat Northwestern. I mean, have them down most of the game. And then they jump all over Illinois at Illinois. Chris Holtmann is doing a hell of a job here in a tough league without two guys that start a point guard, Seth.
I 100% agree with you, but here's the thing. I think they got really good players.
Really good.
They don't have point guard right now, but they got really good winning.
Really good.
All right. They've had four different guys lead them in scoring in Big Ten play in eight games. Four different guys. They got four guys that can drop 20 on you in any given night. They're developing depth. Seth Towns is starting to play a little bit and be productive. He's had 11 a couple of games. I mean, he's a talented kid. Justin Suing, good. Kyle Young is a grown man. I mean, he will hit you by the side of your head and knock you into tomorrow. I mean, that's in the Rutgers game. Like, my man took over the game. Now, I don't know how many people said, well, you know what? Kyle Young's going to be at the top of the scouting report. That's like Wyatt Wilkes yesterday for Florida State, the dude at 13. I'm not even sure if he was on the scouting report.
Right.
It is. EJ Liddell, I mean, he goes 3 for 4, I think, from three-point line yesterday. When he just plays within himself and just plays really hard, again, look at the guy's body. Like, look at those dudes' bodies compared to, like, we just talking about Kentucky. These are grown men now. I mean, they're physical specimens. They are guys that can hold the spot, that can hold the block out, that can get through a screen, that can actually know how to screen someone. Dwayne Washington, you know, when he shoots it, you think it's going in. This thing's going in. What is the Zeb kid, the big kid, is getting better every single game. I just look at their team, and they've got a good – they're a team. You know, they're a team. They kind of pick each other up. They, you know, they play a hot hand. They have a you know, the term trust is a silly thing. But, and I think that comes from Chris Holtmann. I think, you know, his even keel leadership, his ability to say, all right, this is what we're going to do. This is how we're going to do it. This is why we're going to do it, to a mature team that can actually understand that, I think is the difference in their team. And they also have the maturity to deal with dealing with adversity. I mean, like, you know, so they're going to lose a couple games. They understand that. That's all part of it. Like, in the Big Ten, it's not losing a game. It's how you handle losing a game. And I think his approach is really, really important. I look at Chris and I look at Mike Young at Virginia Tech, and I think they're both doing kind of the same thing. Mature, tough, winning players, dealing with each game as a separate entity. Coaching their team, staying focused, not getting outside of themselves, not trying to do anything they can't do.
You know, when people ask me all the time, okay, who's your all Big Ten team, right? And Garza's, you know, and Dickinson, certainly. EJ Liddell is right there.
Yeah.
And here, I'll give you a little something. When Kyle Young came to Ohio State, he wasn't a big-time national recruit, but he was a big-time Ohio recruit, like, and big-time scorer. And I think Andrew was a grad transfer, and Kyle was on that team. And Kyle, there was all kind of, you know, you sit with the parents, and Kyle's people were great. But there was all rumbling around, like, right, you know, oh, Kyle should leave. Never his family. But, you know, Dayton should be a better place. And it wasn't it was talk, you know. And if I heard it, because I don't pay attention. But his family was great. The kid, his mom in particular, the kid sticks it out. And you know what he's been? He's been a 3-year starter there. And you talk about a grown man that not a grown man. You're not a grown man because all of a sudden you're a senior in college. You're a grown man because you've been through some. And you don't quit. You don't run away. I'm not saying you don't, you know, some kids transfer and it works out great. I'm just saying in his case, he didn't quit and he just went to work.
Yep.
And I tell you what,
good.
He is as valuable a guy to a team, but in terms of players, Justice Suing, that kid to me is going to be 50 years old, scoring against 25-year-olds. Because that's what he got great hands. He can go inside out. But Liddell's the guy, man. Liddell is really, really good. All right.
I got a question. You sat with your parents?
I did. I love sitting with
That's a I never sat with a parent. And I was, it was when, you know, my daughter's sports. I couldn't sit with the parents and listen to them kill coaches. I just couldn't do it.
Yeah. Kata Bates Diop's dad and I used to sit next to each other. And man, Kata was the player of the year in the league, right? What's he, you know? But his dad was a great dude. And I think Chris did, I don't know if he did on purpose, whoever did it, but I always know it was me and, you know, whoever I brought sitting by Kata's dad and his mom and his brother, who's got a great story, by the way. But, and I loved it. I truthfully, the parents at Ohio State were so great. The parents of Michigan were so great, frankly. And yeah, I just sat in the middle, and if anybody wanted to go have a beer after, and I was staying in town, then let's go. I mean, so, all right, let me ask you a couple things. Weekly update. Gonzaga, now this is Gonzaga now, only wins by 15 or 14 on the road at St. Mary's. Personally, I'm not the biggest St. Mary's fan. Does anybody come within double digits regular season in that league of Gonzaga?
I don't think so, because, I mean, the closest team that can control the tempo and rhythm of the game in that league is St. Mary's. They'll play the slowest of anyone in that league. And, like, if you're going to go up and down, like, BYU goes up and down with them, that's going to end ugly. USF potentially, because they shoot a ton of threes, maybe. Like, I watched both of the Gonzaga games last week, and I looked at a team that is so gifted offensively that, all right, when they decided, they just run off 6, 8, 10, 12 points. So the only way anyone's going to get within that is if basically Fuey, that one, subs early at the end of a game, but then, like, the dudes that are coming and can all play.
I mean, yeah, right.
And they've got maturity. You know, like, Timmy's probably the closest thing to a guy that you don't know what you're going to get every single night. All those other guys, like, he's going to defend. He's going to run. I mean, he's playing at a ridiculous level. I mean, Kispert, every time he shoots it, you think it's going in. I mean, Suggs is just a physical specimen. I mean,
he might be the first pick in a draft.
I think he's Jason Kidd. I mean, I think at that same level, not what Kidd was in the league, but, you know, people forget what Kidd looked right. like as a cow. They're developing depth. You know, the Cook kid, I mean, they're developing depth. I mean, they got in foul trouble the other day, and they keep on keeping on. I'll tell you the team, though, to me, that is, I think, has made the biggest jump. So, I don't think so. Iowa is the perfectly the two things that they do, and you know,
who?
Iowa. Oh. Iowa's team is perfectly constructed. They've got not only good shooters and skilled guys on a perimeter, but they have more guys that can feed the post than any team I've ever seen in recently. Like, they'll shot fake, ball fake, one dribble, take it to the baseline and feed it. They'll fake to the baseline, crossover step, all right, and quickly reverse it to go high-low. They'll come off a screen, and if someone shows, they'll throw it. Garza will get doubled, and he'll feel the pressure. He's gotten so much better at his double team. Their post action's pretty good, or they spray it out and make another pass. They all can shoot it. They have the ability. They share it. They play to a hard, hot hand. But, like, Garza flat-out said in game day the other day, because they know, look, we don't get better, we're not going to do what we want to do defensively. And they're getting better defensively. They're getting a little bit more of, all right, we're going to give this, we're going to take away this. You can't take away everything. So a team like Iowa, they got to decide what they're going to give and what they're going to take away. And I just think you watch them play, and that ball goes bop, 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 bop. Everyone can make a shot, but everyone can pass. The most underrated skill in basketball is a guy that can pass it and pass it on time. And I watched them. I watched a bunch of stuff on Synergy. They're just fun to watch move the ball.
We got Coach Holtman.
Hey, what's up, guys?
We're very pleased to welcome. We've just been talking about you, so we might as well talk about you to your face, for crying out loud. Chris Holtman, the head coach. Hey, Coach, we were talking about a couple of things and some guys, one of which was Kyle Young. I mentioned this. I mentioned when Andrew was playing, I would sit, you know, I sat with the families, and usually by Kata Bates Diop's dad. And Kyle didn't play, right? I mean, he didn't play a whole lot. He played, but he was a big time recruit in Ohio.
Yeah.
His mother was awesome. And the kid, you know how it goes. Oh, I should go to Dayton or whatever. never wavered and just went to work. Talk about his value, not only playing, but maturity and going through stuff.
It's a great point. First of all, great to be with you guys. It's always great to be on every year, but you're exactly right on Kyle. He's one of those throwback kids that, you know, he's got a throwback style in the way he plays. And then he really makes you think of those, you know, days, 15, 20 years ago where guys just accepted the fact that they were going to have to wait their turn to a certain degree and understood that. And you're right. He was second to Caleb Wesson in Mr. Basketball in the state of Ohio. So it's not like, obviously we recruited him hard at Butler. It's not like the kid didn't come in as a top 100 player. He was the back end of the top 100, but came in with accolades, and he just never a peep from mom, family, brother, sister. Obviously his dad's tragically passed, but never a peep. He's just a throwback. It's as refreshing as you could imagine it would be, having both guys that coached as long as both you guys did.
Coach, you have a team of grown men. I mean, I look at your team, just everything about your team, there's a maturity about us, which is so uncommon, obviously, in college basketball today. Guys are invested in each other, invested in the program and what you're doing. But also your leadership is so calm and so even. How do you deal with – you've had four different leading scorers in eight league games, which is crazy. Yeah. You know, a couple of weeks ago, you just lost both of your point guards. How did you approach your team saying, all right, you know what? Things happen. We'll figure this thing out. I actually saw one quote. You said, we'll figure it out. You know, what was your approach when you lost, basically your two playmakers, your play starters?
You know, Seth, I appreciate you saying that. And, you got so much, like we play Purdue, I got so much respect for their culture, their maturity. So when a guy like yourself recognizes that, it means a lot, because I do think we have a mature group. I think, listen, when Abel Porter, who we brought in as a graduate transfer, was going to be our backup point guard in the fall, when he had a heart condition, Seth, we started working with Justice Suing. We were already going to be a little bit thin at the backcourt. I just kind of went into the season and said, okay, we're going to be a little bit thin in the backcourt, but we're going to roll with CJ Walker and Dwayne Washington and then try to maybe bring along another guy. But we started working with Justice Suing as kind of a backup option. So we felt like we had that in our back pocket. It has bothered us a little bit at times, pressure and teams taking us out of stuff. But our guys have really responded. I think obviously as a coach, if they see any type of panic on our end, then that's going to communicate volumes to them. And you know how it is. We kind of have a saying, focus on the bricks, not the wall. So it really was just staying in the moment of every day, trying to fix whatever we can here from moment to moment.
Coach, Seth Towns transfers in. He's been hurt. He's a Columbus kid. He got 16 minutes the other night, had 11 points. But going backwards, before the first of the year, he had 15 minutes, and then it went down. Where's he at right now, health-wise and in terms of your rotation? Because as you said, man, you got a big one tonight, and it takes maturity to beat Purdue, as you well know.
Oh, does it ever? Does it ever? I mean, it takes great maturity and great toughness. You know, Seth, he's getting better. He's had some days where, honestly, guys, he's struggled to kind of get through practice. And, I think for us, we had a conversation. He didn't play a whole lot after Northwestern. And as a mature kid, he kind of said, hey, can we talk? And I said, yeah, we can talk. He said, can you help me understand this and help me understand moving forward? And I said, well, listen, different games call for different things. I had a hard time taking Kyle Young out of the Northwestern game. Stay ready, keep yourself ready. I believe in what you can bring to this group, and it's going to be really valuable. I do think your consistency in practice has to improve, and your lack of health has impacted that. But that's important to me, Seth, for me to see that on a day-to-day basis. And I said, get ready for today. We had that conversation or right before the Illinois game. And then he gave us a huge lift in the Illinois game. And I think he's going to do that hopefully throughout the rest of the year as he continues to get healthy.
about Justin Arns? I mean, like to me, you know, I was a big fan of his brother at Michigan State, and just the intangibles and fit for him. Like he comes in, and this is the thing that, look, maturity is important today, but, you know, a unique thing in college basketball to me today is guys actually playing to their strengths, showing what they can do as opposed to what they can't do, which is an epidemic, it seems, in the game. But, like, his ability to just embrace his role, to me, is so much fun to watch.
Yeah. It's interesting, the convincing young players that when you don't play to your strength, you are only hurting yourself. You look like a worse player than what you really are. Like, I don't know why that's hard to understand, but it is. For whatever reason, when you don't play to your strengths, you end up only hurting yourself. And you're exactly right. He's figured that out, and teams are going to start taking away his threes. So, he'll have to continue to add to that, but he's a young man who's kind of really just wanted an opportunity. And because of our lack of guard depth, he played the four as a freshman, and now he's playing the two. And we've had to figure some things out defensively with him, but you know how important spacing is, guys. And just the idea of gravity when it comes to offense, in terms of your spacing. And he's provided that at a huge level. And you're right, he plays to his strengths at a high level. I'm on him all the time. I want him as tough as his brother. Yeah. He's not there yet, but he's made strides.
You know, Seth, I used to tell Andrew, coaches are holding you back, man. Spread out. Get it spread. Screw them. They think you're supposed to pass it and, spread it and go beat it, and I'll be up there yelling, take his ass, take it,
Hey, he listened to you a few times.
Yeah, it never worked out well. Never. No, man, that is important. And one of the things that makes your team, I think, one of the most interesting teams in the country, I really believe this, is, Caleb leaves, you got hurt point guards, but you got Michi Johnson that comes in here. Yeah. Now, the Johnsons, and you can talk to this, are a basketball family, Sonny, the whole thing. But I turn your game on, and I got to make sure here. I think it was against Northwestern at home. Corner, right corner, drills a three. And Seth, this dude's supposed to be, I don't know, he's supposed to be like a freshman in high school. Hell, I don't know. He got out of 5 years of high. I don't know what the hell he did. Seth, he drills a three in the corner and is just yapping at the Northwestern bench. The best. I loved everything about that kid. It's a good story, right?
Yeah, I think I've heard you say, if you're not talking, you're not playing, or something along those lines. And he's one of those young kids that plays fearless. He's a confident kid. I think you have to be when you do what he did. He got here, basically mid-December. And that, again, goes back to us looking for a solution when Abel Porter went down. We presented the situation to him. It's a little bit of kind of the football model, with the exception that you're actually playing in second semester. And, Dan, he's been really good for us. He's been really locked in. He still doesn't know our defensive system or our offensive system. He just started practicing a week ago. And wow. I think I really lowered the expectation for him and for his family, just because, sometimes it's, you have to, because they don't understand how hard this is. But man, and I'm sure he'll have his ups and downs, but he's been tremendous for us.
Now I got a question, Coach. I mean, so if this kid can really yap and he's only a freshman, by the time he's a senior, senior speech, as long as Andrew Dockett's senior speech?
No. Oh.
We had to put Dockett on the clock. He and Jay Sean Tate, who obviously special, special dudes. But, they held the mic for a minute now, Seth. They held the mic up there for a minute.
Now with Dan.
Hey, man. Jay Sean, I mean, how about that story, Coach? He's getting minutes with the Rockets, and that's before the Harden trade. He was getting minutes with the Rockets. I'm so proud, and I'm not proud. I didn't do anything. You did. I'm so happy for that kid.
You know him because he stayed with you guys. He stayed with Andrew. Yeah. He had a beautiful relationship with Andrew. Just again, it goes back to elite people. He's obviously a tremendously talented kid. He was a top 50 player, I think, when Thad recruited him, top 70 player. But just, I mean, character, basketball character. I share the story all the time. Jay Sean Tate's stats went down from his junior year to his senior year. Junior year, they were not very good. They struggled. His senior year, we won 25 games. The Big Ten was down a little bit, but we won 25 games. But his stats went down, and yet everybody in and yet he was all conference. And it just goes to show what happens when you know people are like Jay Sean is. And I couldn't be happier for him.
Coach, yesterday day before, Kim Mulkey said, "I don't feel like I should be coaching. I don't feel like we should be playing." I don't want to get into what she said, just to kind of put it in context. If you had to walk into your team and say, "Hey guys, you know what? We're not playing anymore." Would one of these two things happen? One, they probably end up going somewhere and playing and not a safe an environment. Or two, they would actually be crushed because they love being together. And this is the most normal part of their life to be able to continue to come to practice and play and be together.
You know, it's exactly what you said. They would be crushed. They would be crushed. And, you know, I take a complete break from social media when the season starts. But early in the season, you heard it with football, some of the people talking about, you know, forcing kids to do that, this and that. Listen, from my perspective, what I can speak to on our team here, they are dying to play. They wanted to play. They pushed to play. They skipped Christmas with their families to play over the break. They would be crushed. They would be crushed if we were sitting here at 2-5 in Big Ten play. I can't emphasize enough that the happiest that our guys were since when the pandemic started was when they got here and started working out with our strength coach, Quadrian Banks, and our coaches in the summer. It's the happiest I've seen them. And they'll say that to you. Purpose drives all of us in our lives. And we know young men, they need purpose. They need a reason to get up in the morning. My college coach used to say, you better find something that grabs your guts. This grabs their guts. And I'm glad it does. And I'm glad we're playing.
My dad used to say, you're going to do a lot of things, but one of them ain't going to be sitting around. I mean, that's just, you know, I have a great stepdaughter, and you've met my family, and she's at Harvard, but she's not been to Harvard since March. And they don't have, I swear to God, she would walk to Harvard and go through five of it just to be with her team. And when I read people poo-pooing that, I think to myself, that's got to be some type self-serving thing as opposed to what's for kids. I want to get to a kid. I remember I saw him, a while ago in practice, E.J. Liddell. And, you know, there are some kids that come out of high school. He's two-time Mr. Basketball in Illinois, which doesn't happen. And, you know, supposedly undersized. And sometimes you watch a kid, you go, he'll be okay in the Big Ten. I remember seeing him the first time thinking, wait a second. This dude knows how to play, and you have used him beautifully. If you don't mind, a few minutes on him.
Yeah, you did call it. You were at an early practice last year with him, and you know, we recruited him and knew he would be, I think, a really good player and a really good player in a Big Ten. As a coach, you guys know this. You're always trying to figure out how to put your best players on the floor, and that may not always look in a traditional sense the right way, the right lineup. And when you're thinking about Garza and, you know, Travion Williams and all of the centers in the Big Ten, you know, we had some concerns about, you know, were we going to be too undersized? And yet EJ clearly is a terrific player and one of our best players. He's very talented. So figuring out a way to play he and Kyle Young along the front line has been critical. And what it's ended up doing in a number of games, guys, is it's allowed him to play to his strengths, which can stretch to three, but is also really good 15 feet and in. He's an old school player in that regard. And, you know, in high school, he was coached terrifically in high school. He has a tremendous high school coach, and they won a couple state championships. But in high school, he kind of stayed all around the rim, offensively and defensively for the most part. So we've had to bring him out and expand his game a little bit. He's grown. Again, terrific kid, terrific family, extremely well coached in high school. I'm thrilled for him that he's seen some success early in his career, and it's hard in this league as a sophomore, but he's done some really good things.
Coach, two or three things you got to do against Purdue.
Listen, I think I think you got to enter the game, and you guys know this better than me, particularly with this Purdue game, understanding it's like hand-to-hand combat every single possession. And they have a toughness about them that I think is what makes them really special and unique. And it's across the board. It's not just inside. Travion is obviously a load. Edie's a load, but their wings are physical. So I think number one, embracing that aspect of it. We're going to have to figure out how to defend the post and make it difficult. And then we're going to have to challenge their threes. And then the last thing I would add is, you know, you got to score on Purdue, because if you don't, we were not efficient at their place. We just weren't. We got bumped off cuts. We got bumped at the basket. You know, we had Justice Suing, who was like, whoa, welcome to Big Ten play. I'm playing Purdue. I came from the Pac-12. It's a little bit different. I said, what are your observations? He goes, well, it's a lot more physical. Okay, just stop there. Okay. I think we got to be better in that regard.
You know, Seth, I'm not supposed to say this, but I went to the Purdue game, Indiana, for a variety of reasons, one of which was there's a great steak place in Bloomington, and I took my wife, and I'm like, hey, let's go, you know.
Okay. But you have to pay?
But Coach Wynn, it's interesting what you said. You know, my wife coached a long time and all that. And when Purdue came on the court, now there's nobody there, right? You're kind of sitting by yourself. When Purdue came on the court and Indiana came on the court, the first thing she said, she goes, Dan, Purdue wants to fight. Like, not that they were going to, you know, go over to the bench, but that's just the way they, you know, their persona coming on the court.
Yeah, that's them. That is, I think that's so them. And it's more them this year for whatever reason than last year. It's always been really a part of Matt's program, right? And I'm sure a part of Coach Katie's, but that's them. That's them to a T. They bring it. They're playing as well as anybody in the country right now. You know, I think we're playing it well as well. So, listen, it should be a really good Big Ten game. And, I think you got to have that mindset stepping in between the lines with them.
Coach, we really appreciate you doing this, you know, especially today. And we have so much respect for what you do, putting up with Dockage for a couple of years. Is even respectful. But I mean, just, you know, I'm
the model parent.
I'm going to embarrass you, because I still remember, and it sounds silly, I'm at Virginia Tech. I'm listening to you play against my brother's team. And it was a really, really close game or whatever. We would always talk after each other's games. And he literally said this to me. He goes, let me tell you something. That guy can really coach. But that's not what impressed me. When he got let go, you not only reached out to him, but you reached out to me. And that meant the world to me. And I know it meant the world to him. So thank you.
Heck of a coach. You know, you enter a league and there are guys that you really respect in the league. And I was a, you know, first time head coach, and you know how it is, guys, you've been there, your head's spinning, but you just respect the way guys go about their business. And was definitely a high level respect for him. So thanks for saying that, Seth. I really appreciate it. And Dan, you'll get a kick out of this. I talked to Andrew. Was right before we were playing a game. It might have been a Rutgers game. I can't remember, but I said to him, you know, he called me and I said, you know, we had just come off a bad practice. And I was like, listen, it's, you know, I think, you know, it was typical head coach, you know, day of game, day before the game, you've been there, you got no chance, you're going to lose, you're on the road. We had a bad practice. And, you know, believe it or not, like, he settled me down. So he's already well advanced in this coaching, assistant coaching role that he's in right now. He settled me down and got me ready for the game.
Coach, I'm going to say this publicly, and, you know, Seth knows I'm a self-promoter, but I'd take a bullet for you, man. I would. I'd take – for what you did for my family, I ain't lying. I'd take a bullet for you. I'd take a bullet for your kids. I'd take a bullet for your family, and that's a fact. And I don't want to. Don't be a jackass. Don't get me taking bullets.
Hey, Dan, you've learned a jackass all on your own, so don't put coach in that place.
If I'm around, you know, I asked, you know, if I'm around. But no, I'm serious. The job you did with my son, I could never repay. And your wife, everybody, just great. And I can't thank you enough.
Well, I appreciate it. I really do, guys. And like I said, I love the perspective of guys that have been in the seats that we've been in, man. It just is like, you know, you guys know how it is. It's just, I love your perspective on our game and coaching in general. So thanks for for what you guys do to the game and do for the game. Great being with you guys.
You're the best. Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Hell of a game tonight and a great, great dude. I'm telling you, I'd take a bullet for him.
That dude is like as good as a guy. Like he literally picked up I just moved Brad out of his office, which was an emotional deal. And I get home and my phone's ringing. I left my phone at the house. I didn't want to deal with anyone. And I get home, it was him. He said, I feel so bad for your brother. He's such a good guy, blah, 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 which, you know, he didn't have to call me, you know, which was.
You know how dumb I am? I think I've told this story. He interviewed with me as an assistant, to be an assistant for me at Bowling Green.
It's a great career move, not him not taking a job.
Yeah. Seth, I swear to God, I knew we were going to get fired. My three best players were out for the year. They had been out the year before. And I'm like, you know what? You're great. But I hired a friend of mine that I grew up with who was older in my neighborhood who had been fired. And Johnny Stroy had been at Weber State, and they went undefeated. But 2 years later, they got fired at Weber State, and Johnny was out of a job. So I'm like, you know, I'm going to help a friend of mine out for a year. Because I knew, you know how you know, like, come on, I'm not playing with Julius Peppers as a walk-on. You know what I mean? A football player at Bowling Green. But anyway, that's how dumb I am, and it's the best thing ever happened to him. And he's fantastic. And it's going to be a hell of a game tonight. You know, first game, he's right. Purdue beat him up. Purdue was better.
It's one of those games you're excited about watching. Yeah, that's really good. It's one of those games you're excited about watching. I mean, it's going to be just a high-level, competitive, well-coached game.
Hey, last thing before we go, I want to ask you one other thing, and then I'll let you. When you look down south and you look at Baylor, obviously the best, Texas A&M, Tennessee, who are you seeing south of the Mason-Dixon here?
I think that Baylor and Texas have separated themselves.
Let's take Baylor out of it. Baylor's the best. Who besides them?
I think Texas is better. Tennessee concerns me because I'm not sure they can score it. Texas Tech concerns me because they don't have anyone to throw to in the post. So they defend, and Chris does a great job, and they play so hard, and McClung, you know, made that jumper against Texas. I think Texas is upside defensively, and Texas is a lot like Baylor. They are so freaking connected defensively. They have versatility where they can switch, and their bigs can keep the ball in front. They can protect the rim. They can get some easy baskets. I do have a little concerns at Texas. I think their guards are a little emotional, so that they play on pure emotion, which has helped them so far, but it could also hurt them. Like it's impacted more in their shot selection at times. Tennessee, I'm not sure that they're offensively yet. I just don't think so. I would say Texas. Alabama can score it. Alabama defended better against Kentucky. Like I thought they were more committed. They make you match up with them. Losing to Yale transfer Bruner, I think it hurts them a little bit.
Bad. He's smart.
He's a good player. And I think that hurts him a little bit. I do think that their uniqueness, it makes him special. And like John Pettit not even shooting it great. Shackelford played better last year than he did this year. Herbert Jones is a not like that dude is Stacey Augmon with a jumper. He's a matchup nightmare. I'm still not there with him. I still say probably Texas, Tennessee, Alabama, Texas Tech.
You know what? When I saw Petty last 5 minutes get in the stands and demand to guard Cooper from Auburn, Shreve Cooper, and he did it. He turned him over. He ruffled him. That told me a little bit about that team because he's one of their leaders. But you're right, Bruner being out. Hey, I want to thank everybody for listening. The World's Greatest Podcast, as always, download us wherever you get your podcast. Thanks, of course, to Chris Holtman and our boy, Charles Taylor Schwick.
Thank you for listening to Courtside with Greenberg and Dockage. You can listen and subscribe to all ESPN podcasts in the Listen tab of the ESPN app, including the latest from the NBA and the Hoop Collective podcast, available in the ESPN app or Apple Podcasts.